Would you just shut up and listen to me? Okay, I've traveled across a lot of time and space to come find you. What I'm about to tell you is going to sound, completely insane. But, please, just go with it.
Yeah.
I come from a planet called Earth, a time centuries from now. And I've come here to warn you. Someone from the future is coming to destroy Krypton.
Okay, right. Why? Why would they do that?
Because where I'm from, your grandson becomes the greatest hero in the universe.
Welcome to the sixth episode of Zero Hour Strikes, the show that covers DC's 1994 crossover event, Zero Hour Crisis in Time. Every issue, every tie-in, every zero issue eventually. I'm Siskoid.
I'm Bess.
And in this episode, we take a look at Superman number 93 and Dark Stars number 24, essentially starting week two of the event. And you know how I know that?
Well, somebody said it on the internet.
That must be it. No, because we've just had Zero Hour number 4. So.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Now everything is prologue to Zero Hour number 3.
Mm-hmm.
At least I imagine that's how it works.
I hope that's how it works. That's how we do it.
In reality, some of this stuff, you will see little bits that take place before or after, during, and
yeah.
It is a crisis in time.
It is a crisis of time.
A bit like our schedule.
Kind of, yeah.
let's just get right into it. Superman 93 is going to pick up the thread teased in the previous installment, that is to say, Superman the Man of Steel number 37, mm-hmm. Specifically the subplot that had Jor-El and Lara arriving at the Kent farm.
Surprise, surprise.
Pretty clear from the cover, in fact. What do you think of that cover?
It's all on there. We have Jor-El and Superman's mom.
Lara.
And
you're not showing your cred there.
No, I know. It kind of always sounded weird to me that the men had these weird names like Jor-El and Kal-El, and the ladies just ordinary names like Lara, Kara, just ordinary names, whatever. No house of anything, you know, just
Lara El.
Yeah, it is.
Only the male have, or it's Kara Zor-El, so it's the father's name.
Yeah.
Right? So Lara is probably whoever her dad is. Now I'm showing my lack of cred.
Whoever that
with Bronze Age Superman stuff.
But you know, it always kind of bugged me. But nonetheless, we have the Kents on one side, we have the Els on the other. We see Superman in a weird falling type move, and
I'm gonna fly that way towards my other parents. No!
Yeah.
We're holding your cape back. You can't go.
The
Kents are stronger than Superman.
The perspective is kind of weird on this one also. Yeah. It's kind of flat.
It really is. The parents are closer. I mean, the Kents are closer than the Els, but they're still too far away to be holding the cape that way.
It's
like they were added later. I mean, for Dan Jurgens, this is a weak composition, let's say. The composition's fine because you've got two worlds contrasted. But the perspective is off.
I really don't like it. That's what I was going to say. I'm just not digging it. But you know what? It has the Zero Hour logo on there, so we're going to read it nonetheless.
Superman number 93 by Dan Jurgens, the architect of Zero Hour itself, and Joe Rubinstein on inking. It's called Home! Exclamation mark. Metropolis, 20 hours, 31 minutes ago. It's Dan Jurgens, so he's going to use that those time tags. I don't know if anyone else is going to use them.
Because
Dark Stars doesn't use them.
That's true.
Which comics are going to use it, or is it just Dan Jurgens and it's his own little fetish and nobody followed him to that dark place of the soul? So it's 20 hours, 31 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Supergirl is fighting an alien craft when she gets the call to arms from Superman. He soon shows up in person to throw the spaceship into deep space because there's really no time to take care of alien invasions right now. When he checks on Lois, she tells him the Kents have been trying to call him, so he calls back, but the line goes dead before he can get answers. He hems and haws about whether to check on them or go deal with the Zero Hour crisis, but does, in the end, head for Smallville. When he gets there, he finds his Kryptonian parents alive and well, telling him that Krypton didn't blow up after all, and instead flourished. They had another son, who now has kids of his own, and are here thanks to a serum that temporarily allows them to leave Krypton, which they are genetically bonded to. He knows this is a temporal anomaly, but he dares believe he could visit the restored planet after the crisis is over. They tearfully accept his home is Earth before they are swallowed up by time. Metron tells Superman they were not his real parents, but a Jor-El and Lara from an alternate timeline, but close enough. Before leaving, 17 hours, 4 minutes ago, he comforts his adoptive parents. That's the story.
That's the gist of it.
Yeah. First, if you're wondering when this is in relation to the Time Wave, it's between Superman and Metron recruiting everyone and Wave Rider learning about the crisis and vanishing point. That's the 20 hours ago. That's where that is in the 0 hour book. In other words, Supergirl is getting the message like an hour late, which I don't get. It's not like the message appears at an opportune time. It's a really not opportune time.
Yeah, she's fighting an alien invasion.
So why is this popping up now when it happened an hour ago? Or did they send like separate messages? It took like an hour to do separate messages for everyone.
That's time-wise, shitty
ring slinging from Kyle.
Yeah, I mean, time-wise, it's kind of clanky, but I kind of enjoyed the fact that the hologram is there following her through her, you know, she's working. And the hologram's always there.
Yeah, you keep getting texts from Superman. Yeah,
exactly. Ugh. Notifications, come on. But it just keeps on giving the whole way through her, you know, her combating or fighting this alien invasion. And just Superman just does the most Superman-ish thing ever, throwing the spaceship into space. Just, I don't have time for this. Shoo, get out of here. It's kind of dumb, actually.
Well, they sort of tell us that like, maybe the spaceship is part of a temporal anomaly.
Yeah.
So let's just throw it back and it never comes back. Jurgens doesn't riff on DC history. This is the problem, I think. Like, other books have gone with, okay, let's do, like, that deep cut in 0 hour itself, where Hal Jordan is basically in a Silver Age story. But in this case, the spaceship at the beginning is just generic.
Yeah.
It's not from a pre-crisis story or anything that...
I mean, it could have been from from invasion. It could have been from any...
Yeah, that would have been interesting. I mean, like, do something that we will recognize. Right now, it's just like a saucer-ish kind of ship. And the names of the Kryptonians that are name-checked in this, Jen-M, who is Krypton's savior, who actually saved the planet.
Yeah.
Jor-El screwed up. He didn't. Or Zan-El, which is Superman's brother. I don't think they reference anything. I don't think that's like, those are names from the Bronze Age when they developed all of the world of Krypton.
I didn't recognize anything, but
I searched.
So many things just slipped through.
I used the DC Wiki and it's like those names didn't pop up.
So it's basically alternate timelines.
But invented for this. If they'd used names from another continuity, I think that would have been much more in keeping with the 0 hour feel and style.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm still wondering why we have this first act with
Supergirl.
It feels kind of weirdly clanky. Where did they want to just, I don't know, highlight the Superman family? Or because it's not really Supergirl, right? It's Supergirl Matrix.
This time there's no other.
Of course.
But
she has like the power to disappear.
Because it seems to me that at the time, Supergirl would have been more of a character in like Action Comics or something. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there were like continuing stories in Superman itself.
Because the whole Supergirl thing.
But it's just a way to let's recruit her. She'll be in 0 hour later. So let's just do a little bit here. And
I keep doing that, right? I keep doing the... I don't get why this person is in there because it doesn't pan out to anything inside the comic, but it's a bigger event. It's a bigger event and they're kind of, you know, foreshadowing a lot of stuff.
They want to tell us Supergirl's going to be in 0 hour.
She's in there, yeah.
Because she is one of the problems.
It
doesn't mean it's going to do anything, but I mean, she is one of those anomalies because she was a member of the Legion of Superheroes and now that's not possible. At this point, I guess we're in 5 years later, tail end of 5 years later, they've replaced her with Andromeda, with Laurel Gand. But still, it's like, maybe it's also because we're going to get to see his family and she's part of the Kent family. She was also raised by the Kents.
Yeah.
And in the other continuity, she was part of the L family. She's a cousin. So maybe it's like a big family.
Thematically, it works. And that's what I kind of got from it. But I didn't really think that, oh, you know what? We're going to see Supergirl later on. And it really felt like it was just a means to an end to get to Superman. But now I kind
of
get it.
What do you think of, and I guess we've seen this before with Batman, but what do you think of the plot with the parents are alive, confronted with that other life that you might have had your parents not died? We can contrast it with Batman if you like, because that happened in Detective Comics.
Yeah, and I think actually we should. Well, it's definitely a way to get underneath these superheroes' skin, right? It's like their big thing. Although, Superman always seemed to me content and happy with the Kents. He was always Clark.
In post-crisis continuity, certainly. And then there's like the Silver Age has a lot of trips to Krypton, and he feels like that's also home.
Yeah.
He's a man of two worlds, but not the... post-crisis Superman.
Exactly, exactly. And I always felt that he was fine with the Kents, and he was fine as, you know, this adopted child who... And actually, I always thought that he was more of a Clark Kent first type superhero. Mm-hmm. As for Bruce...
Who is Batman first? Is it what you're going to say?
Well, not really. He's Bruce. He's
broken. Oh, he was born Bruce.
He's born Bruce. He's broken Bruce. Now Batman. But, I mean, the first crack, the first thing that, you know, the thing that changed his life was seeing his parents being killed. Whereas Superman never saw that. He was a baby. Probably has no recollection. Maybe with super memory from the Bronze
Age. In the post-crisis, he was actually in a gestating chamber. He was born on Earth. Is the thing.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's only born in that matrix because people don't have kids.
Yeah.
Normally.
So, yeah. So, I kind of liked... That's kind of what they did. They kind of played with the whole Kryptonians not having babies. And the first natural child is the savior. And it kind of brought me back to the Man of Steel, that movie from the early DC extended universe. Mm-hmm. And kind of brought me back to all these things. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay, it's fine. It's fine. But the fact that the parents show up, it was kind of a oh-hum moment. Mm. You know, it's not as... The impact isn't as big as with Bruce. But it does get under his skin.
I agree with you that he's a Kent.
Yeah.
And those are his real parents. And he was never going to leave the planet in dire straits or... I mean, the Kents are really worried about this.
Oh, and they shouldn't.
That they would lose their child, their son. But it's like adoptive parents versus bio parents, yeah, you know.
That's all it was.
Yeah, but there's no way Clark was ever going to make that choice.
I mean, he's probably going to visit, you know, during Christmas time.
Yeah, well, yeah.
But, if, you know, if he's going
to
go,
yeah, he would go. I mean, yeah, to see it.
Exactly.
He would be curious. But the way they play it, I think, is a little bit melodramatic. It's like he's much too emotional about this.
Yeah. Well, he does have super emotions.
He must. Because he also makes that choice to go check on his parents instead of the crisis, which is an, you know, like a iffy kind of choice if you don't know how much time before the time wave.
Exactly. He doesn't have the countdown unless he does.
Unless Metron is giving it to him.
Yeah.
And Metron's on like, is not there and then suddenly there to say, oh, sorry, dude. It's like, so he's aware of all this. He's like, this is your It's a Wonderful Life moment, kind of.
I guess so, huh?
And he's the angel, you know,
kind of.
So it just feels like he's even teary-eyed, and it's much... The histrionics are way beyond what I think Clark Kent, Superman in the post-crisis universe should care about this. Look, you're going your way. You have to leave the planet. I'll be along. Let's find a way to communicate. Let's get some telegrams going.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's a crisis on, and he's never going to be a Kryptonian. He's not going to leave.
Exactly.
But, I mean, ultimately, that crisis is also happening on Krypton, I imagine. It's happening everywhere.
Well, it's happening everywhere and every time. But, yeah, I totally agree because, I mean, the reaction would be, oh, so you're my biological parents. Nice to meet you, because he's never seen these
people. But, you know, reality is falling apart.
You know, we'll have tea later.
If you still exist. If any of us still exist at that point, really, you know, it's like anyone could just be disappeared.
Yeah. And I mean, the whole comic book is kind of a bit clanky because Lois Lane just appears out of nowhere. And she's like the voice of reason. You know, Clark, well, Superman.
You got to call your parents.
You got to go see your parents.
Well, not out of nowhere. I mean, they're married at this point. You know,
Metropolis is a big town. I mean,
and it's halfway destroyed already Lex Luthor's stuff.
She's right there when they land. I mean,
well, he goes to check on her. It's his wife.
Okay.
It's like he went to Metropolis. He wasn't needed to recruit Supergirl because she got the message.
Yeah,
I think he was going to Metropolis to say, "Look, Lois, stay indoors." I don't know.
As long as indoors exists,
you know, and she would go. You know, you jackass! I got to write an article on this. He checks up on her.
Yeah. That's true.
That's his lady. But then, her phone's been ringing off the hook. You deal with your parents. You deal with your parents right now. It's like, okay, honey. Very domestic.
I'm not dealing with Martha anymore.
But it is a detour that when you calculate the times between the beginning and the end, it's like 2.5 hours.
He has no time for this.
And he spent 2.5 hours... in Kansas, doing this stuff. And maybe that's how much time it's going to take for all the heroes to convene. And maybe that's why Metron appears at that moment.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe.
Maybe Metron was going to go, dude, everybody's ready.
Yeah.
We're all waiting. It's time for you to show up. Maybe that's it.
Maybe that's
But it's not necessarily said. And what's odd when we're disappointed with the mechanics of the story is that this isn't like a plug-in. It's not like a writer trying his best to plug into a big event or half-assing it because he doesn't like big events, as we've seen in the past. It's the writer of the event.
The creator of the event.
So it should really tie in. It should be like, I don't know. So
kind of feels like, hey, this is a nice event and everything, but you still have this Superman comic that's coming out next week, and you haven't written anything. So written and drawn. So can you please get on that? And he's like, oh my God, I forgot about Superman.
Even in the art, probably drew it a bit looser because I feel like Rubenstein's hand on it much more in the expression, in the faces. Some of the art looks like, okay, then this isn't like crisp Juergens. The inker really went heavy on it.
Yeah, I think so too. It's still a fun, I guess, Superman comic. We get to see the L's, which is not some you see every day.
Yeah, maybe. But they went for an alternate reality that we haven't seen before.
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, Superman has like a brother and...
It's a nice little story also, you know, being the first Kryptonians to have a natural born person.
I mean, that has some merit. Instead of going back to the past, create something that maybe is new, but that then just disappears.
Yeah. So, I mean, and the half biologist in me is saying, well, you can't be connected genetically to a planet. That makes no sense.
Well, that Juergens got handed this. That was not his fault. I guess this that's John Byrne's fault.
Sense. I don't know who, but
yeah, I'm not sure how that works.
Yeah, somebody was loose on the signs there.
Well, my favorite bit is Superman in the rain with his hair really, really floppy.
Must have been that's Super Rain. that's a nice panel actually.
I like that one.
Yeah, with Mon Pa. You guys want some hot chocolate?
At the end of the day, Mon Pa is real parents.
Yeah, and all is well.
We get it, and so that's how it's going to be. Yeah. Any last thoughts on this before we move to the next one?
It kind of felt like a filler, comic. Maybe it's just there to show us Supergirl or show us the emotional impact that something like this can have on Superman. It felt kind of quickly drawn. I do enjoy the parallel time Krypton where it didn't blow up and we still are there, and that was kind of nice.
And much more involved than the what they did in Detective Comics.
Oh, yeah.
Because in Detective, parents are alive, Batman goes, and then he leaves and does things based on that, but he doesn't get to spend any time with his parents. In the Superman story, Superman gets to know them a little bit.
He gets to talk a bit with the parents, and that's great.
All right. We'll take a short promo break just to catch our breaths.
Yeah.
Because I'll need some breath to get into Dark Stars number 24.
Oh, I can't wait.
So long. I won't let you down again.
It's finally here, coming to the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
General, would you care to step outside?
It's Superman 2 Movie Minute.
Chris Franklin and Rob Kelly are back to discuss 1980's Superman 2, 5 minutes at a time.
Superman faces his toughest challenge when he squares off against Lex Luthor and three villains from the planet Krypton.
Superman 2 Movie Minute, proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Man, this is going to be good.
We're back. We're looking at the Dark Stars.
Yeah, I didn't know this existed.
Okay.
This was 100% a surprise to me.
Where were the Dark Stars in 1984?
Who were the Dark Stars?
Well, if the Guardians of the Universe created the Green Lantern Corps, and the Controllers are supposed to be cousins of the Guardians, then it stands to reason they created their own Space Police.
Of course they did.
Of course. Well, that was the logic behind Dark Stars, created 2 years before Zero Hour by Michael Jan Friedman and Mike Collins, at first focusing on a Dark Star who comes to Earth named Farron Kolos and his Terran deputies. The Controllers expanded the Dark Stars roster after Hal Jordan destroyed the Green Lantern Corps, with a lot of former Lanterns making up the numbers. John Stewart became a Dark Star, and so did Donna Troy, who is one of those pesky historical anomalies left in the wake of the Crisis on Infinite Earths, although that's not addressed. We're up to number 24 now, and Farron Kolos has been court-martialed, though he'll be back just in time for the book's cancellation.
Aww.
Replaced by Donna Troy. So Donna Troy becomes the hero of this book, even though it's more or less a team book.
As she should.
The series would last another 15 months beyond this point. You've never heard of the Dark Stars?
I've never heard of them.
Because at this point in the DC history, there were like three space polices.
That's a lot of space
polices. You had the Green Lantern Corps.
Yeah.
You had the Dark Stars, which are kind of new.
And the Blasters.
No. The other one is the Legion, acronym Legion. So you got like, they each had their sectors and they each had their jurisdiction.
Yeah, yeah. I say I never heard of them, but I did hear the name Dark Star before. I think it was in reference to Donna Troy. And I did.
It works for her because, you know, that she had like, as Troya, she had like those.
Yeah, stars.
Starry, black star.
Yeah, kind of like Star Boy.
Yeah.
And I did recognize the suit. A very elaborate uniform.
It's also the suit that Manhunter wears, or the latest Manhunter, Kate Spencer. So she has that. She uses a lot of, you know, costume elements and weapons found in the evidence locker. Kind of thing. And so there's a Dark Star suit in there, so that's what she wears. So she has that look.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Kind of different, but still recognizably a Dark Star suit. So Dark Stars have a legacy.
Yeah.
But they are, the fact that you don't know them much more than that is an indictment of, not memorable.
Well, no, it felt really 90s.
Oh, man, the comic itself.
It's very wordy, very angsty, very...
Yeah, we'll talk about it after I get through the synopsis, but...
If you get through the synopsis. Yeah.
So I remember reading, you know, some Dark Stars. Maybe, like, the first few issues. Like, I knew Ferran Kolos a little bit. And they did have, like, a crossover between the three police forces.
Okay.
Called DC Trinity. Of course, the DC Trinity now is a different...
Yeah.
ball of wax. So I didn't stick with it. Not to this point.
Well, you were deep into Legion. You love that.
Yeah. Legion's great. I was deep into the Green Lantern core mythos at the time as well. But Dark Stars was just like, well, we'll see. The quality of this isn't quite up there, especially for like new characters. So if you don't fall in love with these characters, it's going to be problematic. And even after Green Lanterns got into it, I had dropped the book long before this.
Okay.
That's basically it. So that Jon Stewart was a Dark Star. I didn't follow Jon Stewart to the Dark Stars book sort of thing. It just was off of my radar by that point.
One of the things that doesn't make them, you know, the Dark Stars that don't make them, is that it's never addressed later. I mean, I know Jon Stewart from later, and it's never referenced.
No, they don't. Remember Donna?
They don't, They don't really talk about it.
No.
It's the cousins of the Guardian. Was it like an alcoholic cousin that nobody talks about?
Well, the Controllers were said to be cousins of the Guardians.
Okay.
But they're really Legion of Superheroes foes.
Okay.
So in the far future, they're building Sun Eaters and they're doing stuff like this.
Okay.
And they don't really look like Guardians.
Okay.
They got like super pink skin like Abin Sur sort of thing.
So they're quote unquote cousins.
They both want to keep order in the universe.
Okay.
The Guardians want to do it a certain way. The Controllers, just by the name, keeping the peace. Guardians controlling the universe. The Controllers. Now, they don't do Dark Stars. You know, if they want to build up on that mythos, they're going to do Blue Lanterns and Orange Lanterns and Yellow Lanterns. You know, that's the way they've gone in the more recent past. So the Dark Stars are, a historical artifact.
Okay.
We don't talk about much anymore. Let's look at Dark Star 24 to see what we can... let's see what you got out of an issue 2 years into it. It's number 24 by Michael Jan Friedman, Mike Collins, and Ken Branch. A time for every purpose. Donna Troy and her deputies are on a mission to stop an entity at a planet in their jurisdiction. They're also on the lookout for Hal Jordan, who recently destroyed the Green Lantern Corps and is Galactic Enemy Number 1. Meanwhile, former Dark Star Ferran Kolos is being taken to his prison when he is intercepted by new Dark Star Jon Stewart, who tells him he's on his side and that he's been framed. Ferran, that is. Donna and her team arrive at Alaxos and find Entropy there, a villainous entity that wants to speed up the heat death of the universe. They're outmatched, but then the legendary Dark Star Vardan Radz joins them out of nowhere. He's the one who originally recruited Ferran Kolos, and he should be old and retired by now, but he isn't. And then Abin Sur shows up, the Green Lantern who gave his ring to Hal Jordan all those years ago. The present-day Dark Stars wonder if they should tell Abin Sur not to give his ring to Hal Jordan because he'll eventually destroy the Corps, or if they should not tamper with history. But they never get a chance because Radz and Abin Sur disappear in a flash of energy when they cross the beams and destroy Entropy. Then they get the message from Superman and head for Earth. Now, later, it seems to take place later in the series, Donna has gone off with Superman and the deputies are mining the store when their building, then themselves, are swallowed up in the blank pages of destroyed history. And we're going to get a lot of these series that end with the white page.
Yeah.
Because history is gone. So they're just like a little blank. They come back to Earth and then there's 0 hour stuff that probably happens and then white page.
Yeah.
Dark Stars from this one issue. What did you think?
It was a lot to unpack. There was a lot of stuff in there. It's very wordy.
It's like all these...
It's a heavy book.
Well, all the alien names, all the alien words, all the alien expletives that they use to replace...
There's a lot.
...normal four-letter words. There's a planet called Genuine. Come on.
Genuine.
Yeah, it's written all... You know, it's written like...
Yeah, like the artists, you know, that...
Okay.
What's the song? I think it was When Doves Cry or something that he covered.
Anyways. Okay. Well, all of that.
Yeah.
And that just makes it a lot harder to get through.
It is. It was a tough...
Beyond the fact that we don't know who these characters are and learn all the names, there's a lot of them. I guess any given issue of Green Lantern Corps with a lot of Corps members. But then there's also the way they speak. And they've all got a... Each character has their own... invented slang, and I think that's what makes it heavy to read.
It's a heavy read, and for some reason it feels heavier than a GL Corps book, because I don't know if it's the uniform or
maybe
because the Green Lantern book, the Green Lanterns, you get just the basis to be a Green Lantern gives you a bit of the characters that are Green Lanterns. You know, they're fearless or they can overcome fear. You know, they're basically good people. So you kind of get like a background of everything. I don't understand
who gets the Dark Star.
So I don't know how you get, is it a ring? Is it a suit? How does it work?
It's a suit. It was supposed to be much more like they're cops.
Okay.
Like a police precinct kind of thing. And then they've tried to do that.
Because I don't recognize a badge type thing. Because the ring is the badge for the Green Lantern Corps. So, you know, if you get the ring, you've been chosen by the ring. You have this, at least this certain set of...
Dark Stars must be like a job.
I guess so. So I didn't understand any of this. So every character is a different character with everything to find out. I mean, I know nothing about these people.
Well, I gotta say, for me... I know a little something, but I mean, it's still, it's always like this when you're reading a crossover across different books. A lot of these books have subplots going on. If you weren't reading the book, you have no idea what the, you know, it's like 3-4 pages of stuff you don't care about because it doesn't connect to the crossover and you don't know the characters. And that's going to happen over and over. And we even saw it in a Superman book.
Yeah.
With all the, you know, rock and roll vampires and all. So in this, I think they got two extra problems. One of the problems is that Donna Troy is not more central to the whole 0 hour thing. The 0 hour anomaly is about Abin Sur and this other Dark Star, a Dark Star from the past that we've never met and we don't know, so it doesn't actually have that free soul. But, you know, but Abin Sur, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
We know it's a time anomaly because Abin Sur is dead and he's part of Green Lantern's origin.
And it was fun seeing him in action. I mean...
Because we don't get to see that.
No.
But she's an anomaly.
Yeah.
She's like one of the biggest temporal anomalies left over from the Crisis. A big screw up from Marv Wolfman, who wrote the damn Crisis, but didn't fit. I don't know. And then I love to untangle the knot that is Donna Troy. Was he thinking, plenty of stories I can do with who is Donna Troy stuff?
Hey, maybe it was a new Teen Titans plot somewhere that he wanted to do and never did.
I don't know. But it still seems like if your Crisis is going to have a problem and you're actually running the show on one of these characters that's going to be problematic, maybe it wasn't his choice. Maybe, you know, maybe rebooting Wonder Woman is not necessarily... It happened because of Crisis, but not as part of Crisis, right?
Yeah.
There's like a new number one that happens, but Wonder Woman's fine at the end of Crisis.
Yeah,
exactly. Okay. I'll leave Marv alone, but here we are. Donna Troy is a problem. And she's been having trouble getting a proper identity going. Yeah. She was Troya, and now she's a Dark Star? I mean, that's low rent.
And she just ends up being Donna Troy. I mean...
At this point, they call her Donna Troy.
Yeah, she has the Dick Grayson problem.
Mm-hmm. She's been too many identities.
But
she herself is just iconic enough.
Just enough. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the iconic alter ego sidekick names. I mean, everybody knows Dick Grayson. A lot of people know Wally West.
Mm-hmm.
And then Maybe Donna Troy.
She's up there with, or she's down there with Roy Harper, kind of.
Yeah.
But still, like other people have had those names, or she's they've had too many names in her case. But still, why is it not her meeting other selves? Why is it not her being confronted with her now-gone origins on Amazon Island? Why isn't it about that?
Why isn't it Donna Troy-centric?
Why isn't it? It's not, because this is like a cosmic kind of comic book with... But then the plot that you take, okay, let's do Abin-Sur and...
Yeah.
And this Mort, a past Dark Star, who gives a shit? So, you know.
Exactly.
But then they're going to, they're on a mission that starts and ends in this comic.
Yeah.
So it could have gone, let's go to Amazon Island. It could have been on Earth.
It could have been.
Instead, they go and fight another Mort, Entropy, who is a villain that appeared in a couple issues of Green Lantern a couple years before. That's it.
We care nothing about this.
No.
We care nothing about this. We don't care about the old Dark Star. We don't care about Entropy. And why isn't it Donna Troy-centric? I think the obvious answer is bad choices. I mean, it's bad choices. Maybe somebody said, you know, you can't have a Donna Troy-centric comic book. Because, you know, 90s.
Maybe.
You know, she's not important. But
that's not a Dark Star story. Dark Star stories take place in space, and they're kind of tied to the Green Lanterns, and maybe that's what it's supposed to be. But Entropy is a villain that has a temporal theme to it.
A little bit, yeah.
Okay, and that's how it was chosen. But in the end, I mean, even his defeat, crossing the beams.
Oh, seriously.
And the way that Donna herself, who's not a scientist, talks about black holes, and if you get real close to the event horizon, I guess, you know, those energies together. She just tries to explain with technobabble what just happened. It's not like she had a plan and made that plan work. Entropy is defeated by accident.
She's not even part of the attack.
No. It's the two people that no longer exist cross the beams.
To beat somebody we don't care about.
And then they all disappear.
And
then Donna goes... You know what? It's just like black hole physics. No, it isn't. It's got nothing to do with nothing.
And then Superman appears.
And it doesn't even matter that you figured it out, because that's just as much nonsense as it just happening. And it's not like you have... Because the right way to do technobabble, at least, I mean, to make it like our hero has... It's not just not Donna Troy-centric. She's a witness to what's happening. So, you know, like the other... The Dark Stars are just going, holy crap. These guys are supposed to be dead. Oh, no. They're fighting Entropy because they try and it doesn't work. Oh, it's all resolved. Let's go back to Earth where we were just before the issue. I mean, so if at least she had the plan. Oh, cross the beams. It's like a black hole. I don't know. At least she would have been active. But she would have had agency. She does not have agency.
Every Dark Star in there, except for the old guy and Abin-Sur, they should have had a burger or something.
Let's go home.
You know, just something you see across the street when you're grabbing a burger.
Why couldn't Superman call before? If he just called 10 minutes before, yeah,
it was interesting then. Can you?
I mean,
yeah, exactly. Well, so yeah, we read a story about basically people looking at something happening that's not going to change their life or whatever ours or anything that's going on, and they just saw it and then they're doing something else. Basically that.
This is like the border between the gutter between the panels gets a bit thicker, and then suddenly, and it was confusing to me.
Yeah.
That bit where suddenly we're on Earth and Donna's like, who's in the building? I guess they're back at the precinct, and it's a while later, and then the building disappears, and then because the building's older than the people, and then the people disappear. I'm going to say that's what it is.
And then all white.
All white. What do you think of those all white pages? We talked a little bit about it before because we saw it in Showcase, but...
I kind of dig it. I like it because the all white reminds me of this white thing that just ate up the multiverse in Crisis on Infinite Earths. Also, I think it symbolizes the end. White would be the destruction of every color and drawing on a page. Mm-hmm. I love the white because it's basically a big eraser.
Because in the real universe, absence of things would be black.
Darkness, yeah.
Because you kill all the stars and now it's dark. But in a comic book universe, It's the page is white.
The page is white, and erasers are the biggest threat to anything.
So this is what's happening to the universe.
Superheroes versus erasers.
What did you think of the art? We didn't talk about the art much, but I think there's a couple of nice pages.
You know what? The art is pretty good because I kind of recognize Donna Troy. Because it's, I don't think Donna's mentioned or her name is mentioned in the first pages.
Okay.
And I was like, is that Donna Troy?
Oh.
Is that Donna Troy?
Okay. That's cool.
She kind of looks like Donna Troy. Would that be Donna Troy?
She's Donna Troy.
And she's Donna Troy. And I had to, you know, look up the Dark Stars because I didn't know who the hell these people were. And Donna Troy is part of the roster. So I'm like, okay, yeah. So it was Donna Troy.
Yeah.
Then I came back to the comic.
Because you got Donna Troy, you got a guy with a side shave, and you got...
a guy with big ears.
Yeah. And an African-American girl. And that's the names we have for them. And then you, Colin Farrell has those...
Yeah.
Those,
these things in his
face. Those like tattoos in his face.
Yeah.
And then the other ones are all alien.
Yeah. And Jon Stewart,
you know, announces himself. So yeah. We know,
hello, I'm Jon Stewart. All right.
Who looks like Jon Stewart?
Yeah. And yeah, actually, yeah, he does. So I kind of, you know, the artwork is pretty damn good for a comic that's so bad.
I think I like two moments really.
Yeah.
As far as the art goes. One is when Entropy shoots those bugs, those black bugs out of his hands.
Yeah.
I think that's a cool visual.
Yeah. That would be a nice special effect in a movie.
Right. And the other one is when Superman appears, the projection, because he can see the stars through him.
Yeah.
And the way that's done.
Yeah. Yeah, because that kind of projection, not only was it kind of cool looking, but it also kind of gives Superman this otherworldly, bigger than everybody feel. This kind of
godly... Yeah, because he's giant.
Yeah, because he's giant.
Because when he appeared to Supergirl in the previous issue we covered, he's like a little statue. Yeah. Like, he's a Mego doll.
But Supergirl had notifications. That's all it was.
Oh, yeah. But they get like this...
Yeah.
It's like God appearing before
exactly.
them,
sort of thing. Exactly. And, you know, it's... I dug that. That was nice. And the artwork is pretty nice. And you know what? It does feel like a space opera, a spacey type comic book. And... You know, as much as the story kind of sucked, the artwork is... I liked it. I liked it very much.
Is that your final word on this book?
It is my final word on this book.
All right. We'll leave it at that. Take a short break again. And when we return, your feedback on our previous episode.
Ooh, feedback.
In 2011, the Irredeemable Shag and Aqua Rob Kelly teamed up to create the Fire and Water Podcast. In 2016, they teamed up with Ryan Daly, The Franklins, and Siskoid to form the Fire and Water Podcast Network. A network built on teaming up needs a show about team-ups.
Marvel Team-Up.
Yes.
The Brave and the Bold?
You know it.
Marvel 2-in-1.
It's clobbering time.
DC Comics presents.
Of course.
Supervillain Team-Up?
Good idea.
Youngblood X-Force?
Technically.
FW Team Up, only from the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Letters Lost in Time!
Letters Lost in Time!
Excerpts from your comments on our coverage of Zero Hour number 4.
Yeah.
David S. Gutierrez says, finally... I don't know if he wants us to do like just the 5 issues, get it done.
But that's not going to happen because we're going to read everything. Actually, we're going to read some afterthoughts and scribbles on napkins. So everything's getting read.
He says, we hit an issue. Finally, we hit an issue of the miniseries. When will this show wrap up? 2025? And I keep telling him it's May 2022 at a monthly pace.
Yeah.
But he wants it to be like a weekly pace. He, of course, does not understand your schedule.
No, he doesn't understand my life.
My reply to your Lantern thoughts, he says, yes, any and all Lanterns are superior to Hal Jordan. His original stories were great, but then he became a trucker and dumb and had a relationship with a teenager and grew dumber. His is a character that nobody has done well since his initial appearances, and I think my fondness of the character is more based on the work of Gil Kane than anything else. The look. I still have yet to read the Grant Morrison's run on the Green Lantern, which is like the recent
effort. I haven't read it.
I try to, you know, I always end up reading everything that Grant Morrison has written out of that kind of loyalty. Obviously, I'm intrigued. I'm interested.
Well, yeah.
I just haven't gotten around to it.
Yeah, because, I mean, Grant Morrison can be brilliant, but I'd like to see what he does with Cop Force.
Yeah, I mean, he's doing, like, aliens and outer space stuff, and I'm sure it's fine, but you do have to get over the fact that Hal Jordan is the hero.
Yeah.
But did he redesign him internally so that now suddenly Hal Jordan's cool? I'm going to have to see.
We're going to have to see because he can do amazing character development. The stuff I did like from Grant Morrison was, you know, like the fifth dimension type stuff I really dig. And, you know, the Animal Man, of course. And it all turns out to be a lot of character development. So, I probably read it pretty soon.
Hmm. Chris Franklin says, this is a great setup for the event. I still have nostalgia for the way Zero Hour made me feel when I was picking it up, even if certain aspects of it really rub me wrong now. Zero Hour could certainly become a big CW event, especially if they are wanting to anchor one on the Legends. And hey, bring Hawk over from Titans, and there's your future Monarch or Extant. To which I would reply, no. No, don't do the same mistake.
No, if you can fix that mistake, just do that.
Right. Introduce a Captain Atom, and that Captain Atom can be Monarch. Or somebody else can be Monarch. Or you know what? Monarch kind of sucks. Ange says, I was thrilled when I heard you guys were moving on from Invasion to Zero Hour for a number of reasons. The thing about the main miniseries is that it is one of the DC event comics that I reread the least. Crisis? Legends? Final Crisis? Final Night? All on the every couple years reread cycle. But Zero Hour, maybe I've read it 2 or 3 times. I just feel like it didn't necessarily accomplish what it set out to do. I feel it is sort of a pale shadow of Crisis on Infinite Earths, so I just haven't picked it back up as often as the others. Throw in a doubling down on Hank Hall being a villain, and I'm left disinterested. So I think rereading it along with you guys should help me wrap my head around it a bit more. That said, the panel of the Hawkmen is etched in my brain. I can remember when I saw this issue, I said to myself, this is why they need to do this miniseries. It was time to smooth over the burrs in the timeline that Crisis on Infinite Earths left behind. Bradley Null says, I'd forgotten that I liked the start of the series. There's a pattern of strong starts with questionable ends for DC crossovers. This is the best example of that pattern. Ooh. As I reread this, I realize that this is the place I discovered the Wally West Flash and convinced me to give Kyle a second chance. Both from this issue. So the crossover did what it was supposed to do. The art is great. The series looks good even when its story is weak. It was nice to get bright colors back. It's a side effect of the digital coloring being new. All of a sudden we had the brightness again. I have this series in my head as where the drab DC became bright DC.
Well, interesting. Maybe there's a metaphor in there for the white page being reborn in the digital age.
Right.
Maybe.
Well, we can say it.
We can say it.
We can say it. We can be pretentious and say it. Dan S. says, you guys' comments about the Spectre made me laugh. When Gaiman wrote him, I was on board. I'm not sure when Gaiman wrote him, so I'm not sure if he means Gaiman. I'd have to explore that. I don't think, like an appearance in Books of Magic or something, because
I don't.
Maybe he means a Strander. Strander series pretty good. He says, and Fleischer apparel were legit. Otherwise, that's what I'm saying. Maybe I thought, you know, like for me, a Strander Mandrake was a return to the Fleischer apparel Spectre. Mm-hmm. So the same kinds of stories. Maybe that's what he means. Dan, clarify your comments.
Clarify.
But you know, a Strander Mandrake was going on at this time. And yet there's no, you know, well, just like we saw. Spectre doesn't want anything to do with it.
Yeah, he's
busy. And there is no crossover with the Spectre. We will cover that run because he gets a Spectre number 0. So there's a 0 issue in our future. Tim Price says, maybe I'm alone here, but I was a fan of Wally as Flash since his first issue, spinning out of Legends. So it was crazy to see what Zero Hour already did to him. No build up, just bam. Repeat of Crisis number 8 out of the gate. He got better.
I was a fan of Wally when he was Kid Flash. I mean, I read
Teen
Titans and I loved him. So, yeah, I get you. I get you.
Yeah, it's not just from Mark Waid on. There are some fans from way before. Frank went through each page of Zero Hour number 4 with the same timestamps as the issue with annotations. You can read them all in the comments for episode 5. Among other things, he says, reintroducing Paul Manning was a clever bit of foreshadowing. But again, you don't get points for telling a Marvel zombie, which he was, about goofy Silver Age stuff right before you kill it. This book desperately needed more caption boxes or editorial back matter to clue new readers like me on what any of this stuff meant. Like for you, if you're not too sure, I'm your back matter.
you're my DC wiki. But thing is...
But at the time, we didn't have any of that. Exactly. We barely had the internet. Yeah. I mean, we had it, but... Mm.
But maybe it's not that important, you know, because we're, you know, wiping the slate clean with most of these things.
Yeah.
So we're creating or we're referencing things that you don't need to know because it's going to be gone.
But why are we referencing them? So like for older readers, it's
for older readers,
Paul Manning from that story in the 60s.
Well, I think it's just nostalgia and it's a way to say goodbye to that nostalgia.
But if you don't get it, it's just, okay, we're in the future and Green Lantern's been called there, but it just seems odd if you don't know what's going on. He goes on, he says, hell, by 94, I'm not sure how many Silver Age readers were still around after the scorched earth policy of Crisis on Infinite Earths. So who was getting these references, right? Another example, just because Hawkman cries savage while punching some rando doesn't mean I would connect him to Vandal Savage, even if I've encountered him a time or two previously. I believe I had just started picking up Hawkman monthly a few months earlier, so I kind of knew about the Carter Qatar legacy thing. The black dude, he means Dr. Mist, was a total mystery, but not a compelling one. Page 19, The Call to Arms, strangely worked because I'd been dallying with DC's 90s pushes, so a Ray cameo was more intelligible than an Inza and Kent appearance. Jurgens aping Mandrake on Spectre's cape was a nice touch, he does say. It's always like, I mean, you know what? This is exactly my feeling about Crisis on Infinite Earths at the time.
Okay.
I have the entire run, but I didn't get it month to month. It was just so sporadic in the places where I bought comics. So I found like issue 3 or something, you know. So I'm picking this up and going, oh, yes, it's the new Secret Wars. It's the DC Secret Wars. And I don't know, who are all these people? What is happening right now? How does this connect to anything that I've also been reading? And it just seems, it just confused me. So I totally get where Frank is coming from with Zero Hour, which is when he started dabbling in DC, but didn't know much about it.
Yeah,
I was also more of a Marvel reader at the Crisis point, 85, 86. So I had that same feeling. To me, Crisis, it's a moment and it's a demarcation between universes, between when I wasn't reading DC Comics much and when I started reading DC Comics a lot.
Yeah.
But it's not like this, the event, the story. I am not particularly enamored. So I get what he's saying.
Well, maybe we put too much emphasis on these crises. Maybe they are.
We do?
No, well, maybe they are just these time references where, you know, we hop on and we will hop off. Maybe they're just like train stations.
That's interesting because we do say post Zero Hour for certain things. Post Zero Hour Hawkman, post Zero Hour Legion.
We already started saying post New 52.
Sure.
Post Rebirth. Post Rebirth.
Then it's going to be post 5G or whatever it's called.
Yeah. So maybe we just hop on. Hop off.
This version of the universe doesn't interest me. I'm going to check the next one.
In five years.
Doesn't it?
Because it changes every 5 years. And they're always timestamps. So maybe that's what we're doing. I kind of bummed it out, right?
No, that's good. On the website, you can also read an interesting discussion between Frank, Mark Baker Wright, and myself about whether Barry Allen or Wally West is the CW's Flash in name and spirit. Because we said last time that, you know, it's like it's Barry Allen. He kind of feels like Wally West and he acts like Wally West.
I think the Crisis kind of covered that up.
I've not seen it.
The Crisis, if you haven't seen the Crisis, I'm not going to say anything.
Okay. But
I think it cleared it up.
But Frank says opposite to what we said. So you can read that discussion at fireandwaterpodcast.com and I invite you to do so.
We will. But I think Newberry and Wally, old Wally, are very similar in a lot of things, and maybe it's just family, you know.
Before we go, we have to mention that the Fire and Water Podcast Network now has a Patreon page.
Yes.
If you like our content, please think about making a one-time or a monthly donation, the amount of which will allow you to unlock rewards. You can get on our zero list. I don't know what that means yet because nobody's on it. by sponsoring this show specifically. That's like $5 a month. It's at patreon.com/FW podcast. A reminder that you can leave comments at fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can follow the Fire and Water Facebook page. On Twitter, the account is called FW Podcasts. And that's it. Until next time.
Till next time, I'm still best.
Till next time. Till last time. To a contiguous time.
Till time.
Next on Zero Hour Strikes, Shadow of the Bat number 31 and Robin number 10.